like, I finally finished Shadowheart's storyline.
Very nice.
I had tried that fight like 5 times and I got slaughtered every single time.
The game is hard.
and at the end of certain storylines, yeah, it gets really hard. But I did some like checking online and somebody had said something worked for them. And so, yeah, I tried it out because it's like, well, they gave me that bomb to blow up the Steel Watch and I never did use it. And Karlach's just been carrying it around this whole time. And you can't like use it like a normal thrown item. You actually have to use the throw action to throw it because it's so huge.
Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Yep. Welcome to Preferred Enemies, the Warhammer 40K podcast that has a story to tell. I'm your host, Rob.
Kevin.
Dennis.
And Richard.
And we have a story to tell because this episode we are going to be talking about Crusade and other narrative systems. And before we get into that, though, we had an Adepticon reveal this week. And there's a couple of things we probably should talk about from that.
Yeah.
Like the fact that we got our first looks at the Chaos Space Marine models and Codex and double Battle Force action.
Yeah, I think the Lord models they revealed are really cool. I was hoping that there was going to be a Terminator Lord model just because then potentially it could be available for other factions as well. But alas, we got just two cool regular Chaos Lord kits that seem pretty flexible. Have a lot of different options.
Yeah, the Lord on foot has, you know, a couple of builds with like the helmet and not helmet. He can either have a power claw or a plasma pistol in one hand, and then the other hand is either a looks like a chain axe, demon hammer, or power maul. So a few interesting combinations there. And then we got a Lord on jump pack finally again. Which will make Night Lords players very happy. And he can have a power axe and plasma pistol, or it looks like a and it looks like he can also have a bolt pistol as well, according to the text. And then a pair of lightning claws, or accursed weapons. Maybe they're actually lightning claws. I don't know. I think on the data sheet, they might actually say lightning claws.
Yeah, they do actually say in here lightning claws, so we'll see.
And then we get revealed the Chaos Space Marine Codex with 8 detachments. That's 2 whole Tau Codexes. I'm not happy about that. That's not fair.
Don't worry, they'll nerf the shit out of some stuff in the Chaos Codex too, so it's fine.
Oh, I'm sure they will. Also, there's been some interesting chatter on Reddit, because they discussed a few of there was a video, obviously, along with the release, and this preview is very different than past ones, where in the past, they would have like the trailer videos, and then they would have a couple of hosts there at the GW Studios live on Twitch, doing like kind of real-time commentary and discussing what they liked about the models, and of course, you know, it's all very PR-y, you know, that's to be given, but this time instead it was all pre-recorded with interviews with like the designers.
Yeah, it had a much different feel, but I thought it was fine. Like, honestly, I kind of enjoyed the more in-depth discussions, because the previous previews would just have like the two hosts and they would be talking and like, oh, that's a cool reveal, oh yeah, this is what I want to do with it, and like it really wouldn't go much more in depth beyond that. But here, like, having the designers and being able to ask them questions about the Codex or army book or the model design, I thought was actually informative. I kind of like this style of preview.
Yeah. Now, where I say that there's a lot of chatter about this is the list of detachments. Now, we don't have an official list of detachments yet, but there were several that were listed in the video, and there are a couple more that are mentioned in the article accompanying the reveal. And some of the ones they listed, they said there's definitely a Word Bearers detachment. There's definitely an Alpha Legion detachment. There's definitely an Iron Warriors detachment, or like a Siege Machine detachment. There's a Cultists detachment, which might be Word Bearers, might be Alpha Legion, but we're going to assume that there's enough cultist models now that, because they also specify like, and Veteran Guard, or like the Traitor Guardsmen too. So there's four. So we've got Word Bearers, Iron Warriors, Alpha Legion, Cultists. They did mention Night Lords, so there's five. They said Slaves to Darkness, the Index Detachment is still in the book, and that's probably going to be like Black Legion-y, so there's six. And then they list a couple others, like Piratical Raiders, so like your... Yep.
Red Corsairs.
Red Corsairs are going to be in there, and all your like your traitor war bands that aren't one of the original legions, and then Devotees of Vashtor the Archophane.
Yeah,
so kind of like a Dark Mechanicus feel. Well, that's eight.
I guess that does completely determine that we're not getting a Dark Mechanicus Codex as the unnamed redacted codex.
Right, Dark Mechanicus is going to be in here, but there's also there's a legion that I didn't mention. Emperor's Children.
I don't know which one you're talking about. Nah, they suck. They don't need detachment. They don't need rules. They can all go to Legends.
And so now the Emperor's Children subreddit is like, well, this is obviously proof that we're getting a book in December. I'm like, I don't know if that's if one leads to the other necessarily, but
it's,
you know.
It's similar to what they did with World Eaters, where they released a book early in the year, gave them Get Me By detachment rules in White Dwarf, and then the Codex came out later that year. So I get why they're saying that.
Yeah. And I don't know proof, but I'm leaning that way as well, because we have Fulgrim has models everywhere, and a winter holiday release for that model would be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I would. It's not impossible. Like we could absolutely see an Emperor's Children Codex sometime this year. And yeah, if they are cut out of the book, it does most likely indicate that we'll get some sort of carryover patch detachment. Yeah, it's not what I was hoping, but it is interesting. And it sounds like it's going to be able to go toe-to-toe with the Space Marine Codex for the number of options. Maybe not in the number of data sheets, but in the number of army builds. It'll be pretty good.
Yeah.
And then along with that, when it comes out, we're going to get two separate Battle Force boxes. Now, they had revealed before, like, the Custodes were getting a new Battle Force with the new Shield Captain model, and Orcs were going to be getting a new Battle Force with their new Big Mech that includes a Stompa, because I guess they have so many, they must give them away now. But we get two. We get the Veterans of the Long War box, which is the one that includes the Lord on Foot. And that one looks like 10 Terminators, Possessed, and then like 10 Legionnaires and the Chosen as well. Yeah, 10 Legionnaires, 10 Chaos Terminators, 5 Possessed, 5 Chosen, and the Chaos Lord. And then we also have the Dread Talons box, which is the Lord with Jump Pack, 10 Raptors, 10 Cultists, a unit of Accursed Cultists, a Dark Commune, and a Demon Prince. Now, both of those are pretty solid values, because like that's two boxes of Terminators in the first one, that's two boxes of Raptors. The Demon Prince alone is like an $80 model.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are both really good boxes with zero overlap. And of course, in the video, like, well, that you could just buy both of them. I'm like, yeah, you could. But that would actually be a very good start to an army, would be buying both of those.
No, absolutely. Like, I think things are very well designed, because if you're starting Chaos Marines, really, whatever detachment, whatever style you're going to play, you've got a good variety, like a good base to get started. So, yeah, these are really good boxes. These are both really good boxes.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't dislike them. Like, they're solid. I'm curious what the price point is going to be on these. Probably around at least $200. I mean, army boxes, like the Tau one was 230, the Dark Angels one is 230. And this has more expensive models possibly than either of those, but it also depends on whether they come with the codex or not. If they're just battle forces and not like launch boxes, they might not include the codex, in which case they're putting that cost into extra models, which I'd be fine with. You know, that's not necessary, especially you don't want to necessarily put codexes in these if you're encouraging people to buy both, because people aren't going to want to buy, you know, end up with two codexes. There's no point in that. So
yeah, well, these are being marketed as battle force, so like I kind of think things are going to be evergreen. Like things aren't necessarily going to be the FOMO box sets like the Dark Angels or Kroot box.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see. And of course, GW's also had problems keeping anything in stock. Ask anybody who plays Old World or Legions Imperialis or even like Horse Heresy, trying to get anything. any new releases, so we'll see how many of these actually are released and how evergreen they are. But it would be kind of cool if they let Battle Forces to be evergreen. But we also know, it's not in the article here, but a shot of the new Combat Patrol was also released, which includes the Possessed and the Master of Possession and, oh gosh, what was the Unit of Legionaries, the Possessed, Master of Possession, and a Unit of Cultists. That's not bad. We're seeing them moving away from vehicles in combat patrols, although the new Tau one is apparently going to be an outlier because it has a devilfish in it. But otherwise, yeah, we're seeing more combat patrols with people on foot, and this gives you a fair number of bodies. And I can vouch for the fact that Possessed, led by a Master of Possession, can get some work done in close combat. So, yeah, it's not necessarily a bad combat patrol. And again, other than the Possessed and like what Legionaries and Cultists, you can always use more of those because they're battle line. Like there's very little overlap with the other battle forces. So like somebody who really just decided to go all in on Chaos Space Marines could pick up all three of these. It wouldn't be cheap. You're talking probably about $600 some by the time you're done, but that would get you a whole mess of models for the table with lots of options on builds you could do. So that was it for 40K proper. And then we got our kill team reveal, which Dennis and Richard, this was right up both your alleys. Because Dennis, you get Hernkin Pioneers on foot.
That's going to be neat and interesting.
And all sorts of different loadouts, because you've got the guy with a shovel and a bomb. He looks like a medic. A couple guys with like shotguns or pistols and knives. A sniper Hernkin. A guy with a crossbow, because why not at this point? I mean, if the Kroot can bring a crossbow, you can bring a crossbow. I do like the Ironkin, who also has a jacket, because nobody wants to have him feel left out. You'd hate for him to get cold.
I mean, that's one of the big things about the Pioneers is the trench coats just look cool, and that's why
they do.
I mean, that's why I liked them to start with. I mean, the bikers with the trench coats, and yeah, even the Ironkin and those had the trench coats, so it's just standard issue.
See, when I get this kit, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the dude with the skull cap, and I'm going to put that on the Ironkin, so that he has a little hat too.
We wouldn't want that little dome getting cold.
No, these models look awesome, though. Like, I like this. This is a cool way to expand the range for Votann.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And then they are going to be fighting against Gene Stealer cults, and they're basically are doing a new upgrade sprue for the new Cadian box. Because this is basically it's a Brood Brothers squad, and it is the new Cadian Veterans box, but with a bunch of Gene Stealer parts added to it. And they look pretty good, honestly.
Yeah.
I like the sergeant with the full-on Gene Stealer hand. It's kind of a... It's like, oh yeah, no, you're pretty far gone at this point. However, I do think the inclusion of the old Brood Coven, like the old Brood, like the original, like Extraction Force or Death Watch. No, it was the Death Watch board game. The original Brood Coven from that is a weird include.
Yeah, I guess they wanted to, I guess, include more than one of the HQ units, and, like, I guess that's the easy way to do it, because those are all three on one sprue.
Right.
Yeah, so, there's no, like, way to divvy them up. They're a package, you know, kind of, unless they do something to recut that sprue differently. Mm-hmm. They're all on one sprue, so they're kind of an all or nothing little group of guys.
Right. Now, whether they're going to be unique to being in the Termination box, because I can't imagine that when they release the Brood Brothers Kill Team, they will also include the Brood Coven in every single box. Because, you know, there are people who are going to want to just buy boxes of the Brood Brothers to make a Brood Brothers army.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I could see this being a situation where they release a kind of like a box that has both of them in it, but then when they go to release like the Brood Brothers, it's just the Brood Brothers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would hope so, because it's like all the other kill teams are often, in case they're like, yeah, for 40K, you'd want to buy like two or three of these, but considering you legally can't run more than like one Patriarch or... And nobody needs like three or four of the same, Magus with, or the same Primus with like no options. Like nobody needs that many. So hopefully they would split them out. And that was about it for 40K and 40K adjacent stuff. We got a tiny little teaser of Plastic Mechanicus for Horus Heresy. I mean, it's not subtle what that, like, can you guess what it is? Tell us in the comments of the video. It's like, you don't need.
It's a picture of Mars with a cog. What do you think it is?
Obviously, it's demons.
Right. The other thing I thought was interesting in the reveal was just I'm a sucker for the old world stuff, so I really enjoyed the dwarf release, including the fact that they're releasing like some of the original dwarf models from like the early 80s
as like a made-to-order set. That's really cool. Show like even repaint, it's so like good. Man, you can tell the difference between plastic and metal models from back in the day, like the level of detail, the smoothness of the model, like it's a very different beast. And I'm like, I was watching it, and I was on our Discord. I was kind of like, not live streaming, but I was doing live commentary. And I'm like, they really shouldn't film some of these models at 1080p, maybe 480p at best, because it's not doing them any favors.
Yeah, but I do like those the fact they're releasing some of those classic models. I think that's really cool. Mm-hmm.
And I do like that they've got a few, like a couple new plastic characters thrown in too. Mm-hmm. Like that's, you know, they are doing some new stuff for the old world, and that's kind of cool. And I know they've retouched some of the like old, like I know that with the like the Tomb Kings and such, they like retouched some of the old models or would craft like a new one to complete a unit of three where there were like two molds before. So it's like they are doing some new stuff for it. And it's like, from what I've seen, the people who are playing Old World are really happy like with it, as far as like a continuation of what was once Warhammer Fantasy. And, so, like, it seems like it's being done well, assuming you can actually get the stuff. That's always the big challenge.
That's the challenge right now.
I mean, there is quite a variety of Games Workshop products out there. And I'll just say, on this Saturday, I guess a day ago, when we were doing our Crusade stuff, we saw people playing Old World there. We even saw a couple tables of Battlefield Gothic people had, like, brought out old stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, and they said, yeah, we wish GW would support it, but we'll just play with what we've got. And they had, like, printed off rules and whatnot. So, I mean, lots of people still like
Yeah, like the fan community supporting Battlefleet Gothic, like you can go on a number of sites and like download STLs for printing out the ships, because it's not like these, they're not selling these models anymore. It's not like you're just buying something, you know, or stealing something that they can buy. I mean, technically it's IP theft, blah, 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 blah in this case. But if you're not going to sell it to me, give me another way to get it. And, right. you know, it's a game they're not actively supporting. So there's like entire fan starter sets you can download with like rules and tokens and ship patterns and things like that. So yeah, that's a game where like if they brought that back, like the way they've done with like Blood Bowl and Necromunda and stuff like that, oh, it'd go over huge. Like it would, there'd be a lot of people that would be interested. Yeah, I sometimes wonder if maybe they've spread themselves too thin because they only have so much production capacity and it's starting to show.
Yeah. Well, my hope is that now they kind of have like five main product lines. They've got the Old World, Age of Sigmar, 40K, Horus Heresy, and Middle Earth. My hope is that they kind of can slow down a little bit, get into a 5-year cycle with each of these editions, and then like every year you have a new edition of a game, but it's just on a cycle, and we actually get like slightly longer run times for each edition, get a little bit more spread out on product releases, so we can actually like enjoy them and have time to build and like not just have a, you know, closet full of unpainted, unbuilt models. I don't have a problem.
Yeah, I would like a longer cycle, because that brings me into one thing I did want to talk about. Even though it is not 40K related, we are seeing some of the same things we saw with 10th edition, and that is the launch of Warhammer Age of Sigmar 4th edition. Because they're basically doing to Age of Sigmar what they did with 10th edition 40K. Like, it's an index edition. They are redoing the rules from the ground up. They are redoing all the battle tomes will be officially out of date. They're going to be releasing downloadable faction packs, i.e. indexes for each faction. And they're like, every faction will receive a new battle tome over the next few years. All the rules will be available for free at launch. And that at launch is doing a lot of heavy lifting, which kind of bothers me. Because one of the nice things on Age of Sigmar is you could always, if nothing else, you could view all the unit profiles for free.
Yep.
And that may be going away. They don't have combat patrol. They have spearhead, which is the exact same thing as combat patrol, a fixed force that you can buy and play with immediately, which is not necessarily a bad idea to get new players into the game. And as we've seen with 40K, if they continue to roll out alternate combat patrols or alternate spearheads that use other models for people who may already have forces, but maybe not that particular force with that particular loadout, that would be good. They made a big deal about how like the new data sheets and everything are going to be color coded. There's going to be more abilities, and it's going to tell you exactly when you can use them, much like stratagem cards in 10th edition, where there's like 6 stratagems and they're all color coded to tell you exactly when you can use them. They're going for the simplified, not simple approach, because they're like stripping a lot of things down. Like they said, we're not doing weapon ranges anymore. It's just a 3-inch bubble of engagement. So like spears and swords will have other stats that differentiate them. Rather than, well, spears have a 2-inch range versus swords having a 1-inch range or whatever. So it's weird, because like we've complained about, like I've seen people complaining about the Age of Sigmarization of 40K with like 8th, 9th, and 10th editions. And now we are seeing the 40Kization of Age of Sigmar.
Yeah, it's weird, because normally the traditional path is that you see rules changes in games like Age of Sigmar or Middle Earth. And then they get ported over to 40K. You rarely see rules originate in 40K, then get ported over to the other games.
Yeah, I'm curious. And like, this is like, they haven't released any real details about like what are the War Scrolls going to look like? What do the rules fully look like? It's going to be over the next few months. We're looking at a June release because that's when their fiscal year starts, June or July. Mm-hmm. So it'll be late June. The new box is going to be, the starter is going to be Stormcast versus Skaven. The trailer was phenomenal. Like the stuff that was going on in the trailer looked great.
I do like that Skaven are getting some attention. Skaven are awesome.
Skaven are awesome. And Skaven are also an ancient model line in many ways.
Kind of justifies a little bit them not being supported in the old world if they're going to do something with them in Sigmar. I would love for them to just do both, but can't have everything.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Age of Sigmar, but it is also frustrating. It's like, I was really hoping, like, I have third edition battle tomes for all my factions for Age of Sigmar. I was looking forward to play this edition, and I will, if I do get to play, it'll be right before third edition is no longer relevant. My battle tomes are all there for fluff and nothing else, which is disappointing, but.
See, I was going to say that sounds standard.
It is what it is. It is standard. That's why it's disappointing. It's like, I'm with you, Kevin. It's like a longer release cycle, a longer chance for don't just launch a new edition as soon as you have like all the old codexes updated, because that also leads to feel bads like for Guard and World Eaters players, where it's like, I hope you enjoyed your book for like 6 months.
Yeah, like Flesh Eater Courts just got a huge update, huge new model line, mm-hmm. huge new rules changes, and like that book released like last week. And it's like, hey, here's your book. Fuck you, new edition.
Yeah. Yeah, that leads to a lot of feel bads. And I think that's why we need to see longer cycles, and maybe like once all the codexes or battle tomes are out, give it 2 years to breathe, and then you can do like campaign books, crusade books, you know, narrative. Like they've been doing a series of narrative books for Age of Sigmar, which is how everyone knew a new edition was coming, because it's like they don't start doing a series of narrative books unless they're getting ready to roll out a new edition. We've seen it several times with 40K. We saw it with the previous, from the transition from second to third edition Age of Sigmar. We're seeing it again with new edition of Age of Sigmar with like the Dawnbringer Crusade. So if they start releasing a narrative series for 40K, you'll know that that's when we're going to be hitting 11th edition, when the first of those drop. That isn't just like, here's a war zone, but rather here's an actual narrative and characters that we're actively moving forward one book after another. So interesting times ahead for Age of Sigmar players, as people who have gone through this exact kind of transition with 40K. It's like, we feel for you, especially, you know, Flesh Eater Courts players. Sorry, they just scammed you out of a $60 book. Because it's hard not to feel like that's you'll get a few months to play with it, but it's hard not to feel like you couldn't have sold that at a discount or given those rules away for free.
Well, and as we've talked about several times before, the way that the games are being designed and the way the designs are being moved towards, are codex books and army books even like the best way to deliver rules anymore? Like, is it worth it to spend $60 on a book that's going to be half useless in 6 months? Like, I think it's worth it. It's probably not worth $60, but it's worth something to have the fluff in the book and have all the background stuff. But yeah, $60 for a rule book that's going to be invalid in 3 months, probably, because it's already April. Jeez.
And we also had this same conversation before the latest edition of 40K came out. People were saying, should I even bother with codexes? And I think this was back in like October of a couple years ago, when we all think a new edition's coming out because everything's going to reset. Why should I buy the books? And I think the populace has that mentality in their head now where, is a codex even worth it because it's only going to be good for a short period of time? And like you guys said, they do have ways to extend it by just doing updates. And every 6 months, we're getting a new how to play competitive. Every year, we're getting a new crusade book. Those help change it up that I don't think we have to be on this rigid 2-year cycle still.
Yeah.
Well, and also when you've got websites like Wahapedia, where like the new, like the Flesh Eater Court's book is already up, like you can view all the war scrolls and such there, when like these books are, and yes, it is Wahapedia piracy? Absolutely it is. But when the other option is drop $60 on a book that may be irrelevant, I mean, we're already seeing built-in obsolescence in the 40K codexes because the points pages don't matter. They might as well not even include them because there hasn't been one yet that's accurate.
They tried to not include them and we roasted them for it. But I guess in hindsight, we probably shouldn't have roasted them for it because they aren't really needed.
Well, the thing that I dislike is the fact that GW is doing these full resets more frequently now. I mean, from what, 3rd edition through 7th, it didn't matter if your codex came out at the tail end of edition because the next edition was just a tweak and army books were still compatible. Doing these full resets and like wiping the slate clean with old codexes is a problem. And like, I get it's limiting and it doesn't allow them to like do full resets and be as nimble with the game. But again, I think the larger conversation is that are army books codexes compatible with new game design? And I just don't know that they are.
Well, and as we've said before, it's like most of their competitors have moved away from army books. Mm-hmm. If you see rules for units in a rule book, it's usually like either in the core rule book and also let's, you know, I acknowledge that Games Workshop is unique in that they have more factions in a game than I think anyone else.
Yeah.
Where the faction rules actively matter. They have like it. And so it, understandably, like you could release a tome of data sheets and you probably wouldn't even get all of them in. But there comes a point where, yeah, it's just like it's not cost effective. And especially when you're double dipping on you want digital rules, that'll cost you extra.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want digital rules? Well, you got to buy this book to get the digital rules. No, I want the digital rules because I don't want to buy the book. Give me an option to buy the digital rules.
Well, and I think that's the biggest part of it, too, is like the nimbleness and the frequency of the game updates just don't work well with a print model where it's like you have to print the books, you have to get it done 6 months early and you have to get it, you know, put on a boat from China and, you know, and get distributed. If you're doing it digitally, like in theory, you could do this a lot more nimbler and like charge for that. And then I don't know. I wish they would focus on either being nimble or being like slow it down and be like, okay, we're going to still sell you this book and there's going to be value in it because you're going to get pictures of miniatures and you're going to get battle reports, you're going to get all this fluff and background, and it's going to be useful for 4 or 5 years. I don't know.
I don't think there is not a good answer that would satisfy both the fan base and GW. I think they are fundamentally at odds with how they want to do things. And GW has always been slow to adjust to the changing market and the changing environment. And they are still thinking for the most part in a pre-internet mindset. Like they are thinking of books the way they thought of them in the 90s and 2000s. And I'm sure they are moneymakers. Obviously we see books and rule books and things sell out very fast. And some of that is due to a limited print runs and things like that. It's like they sell because it's the only way to legitimately get the rules anymore. And I think it's what makes the indexes feel so like such a breath of fresh air and then such a disappointment as they're taken away. And we've tread this road several times on the show. We've discussed this, but I think it's worth sticking to is that for the good of the user, for the consumers, for the good of players, for the good of also for the company, because I imagine if they put out fewer books or smaller books or softbound books, they could probably save some money. Like if you wanted to do softbound books that had the fluff and the crusade rules, I think like the people who wanted those would buy them and then release the rules for play for free as digital downloads.
I think the way they're doing the arcane journals for the old world are actually fairly interesting because they released basically your index books. That was Forces of Fantasy and the Ravening Hordes. So your good factions, your bad factions, and all of the core data sheets for all of the armies. So you buy one book and you have like 8 army lists. And then they release these small softcover arcane journals that have like a touch of fluff, not much. But then it just has like some of the special units, special characters, and some of the things that make the army a little bit more fluffy compared to the index one. But they're both compatible with each other, and they're both relatively cheap. Like, the Arcane Journals are $27, you know, little short softcover things that are 50 pages, 60 pages. That's a better model, it feels like, because you can release a new Forces of Fantasy book in 2 years or whatever and update all the data sheets as you need, and then you only have to buy one book to get everything for half the armies. I don't know. There's other ways to do it, and I think it'll be interesting to see how they navigate this.
Mm. And as we said about like not having enough copies, the Arcane Journal for Orcs and Goblin Tribes, which is up for pre-order, is now temporarily out of stock. They sold them all already.
Yeah, that just happens.
Yeah.
I will say this. I think the old world was far more popular than they anticipated it was going to be, because there's a lot of shortages in units and models and books. I do not think they expected it to be this big as popular right away.
I also think they underestimated how popular the return to Epic was going to be, because trying to get anything for Legions Imperialis that isn't the core book is nigh impossible. Almost everything's out of stock. There's a few things that are available, but a lot of it is out of stock. Or some of it, like, they made a big deal that the new edition, like, not only will there be, like, the full buildings like they had in Adeptus Titanicus, but also ruins. You know, there'd be special rules for ruins. The ruins are sold out online. They're not even temporarily unavailable. They're gone. So, yeah,
I mean, do you think this is the cause of them having so many lines where they only print so much, then they're moving on to the next thing they have to print to meet their timelines?
I might
so
be.
That's part of it. Not to get super political, Brexit's the other one, because they're having to move all of their manufacturing back to England. Like, they basically had to shut down their manufacturing in Ireland because the EU tariffs are so expensive. So I've heard that that's a big one. I know they're working on, I've heard rumors that they're spinning up a couple more factories in England, and that will like help with production once those are online. But spinning up a new factory to produce things, that's a multi-year process, and that's a, you know, millions of dollars investment. So I think we're probably going to be in this short-term crunch for another year at least.
Okay, until if they that's get some the stuff case, online. I will say disappointing, but understandable. And also, maybe if they want to put a factory in the U.S., that might be nice. We like models.
I also think that's going to happen.
Yeah, but one of the issues with that, and just with spinning up new factories in general, is that the molds are like your most expensive part of manufacturing plastic miniatures, and you have to either develop or like copy existing molds or make multiple molds so that you can ship them to all the factories, or have certain factories, like for the ones in England, you can have certain factories working on certain things. So like, this is the Horus Heresy factory, this is the Age of Sigmar factory, here's the 40K factory, and maybe 40K also does Kill Team, maybe the Age of Sigmar one also does like Warcry, and then like all the other ancillary games are the third one. So you can have multiple lines running at the same time making different products. But to do that over the United States, now you have to copy that will get very expensive.
I don't know if this is actually the case. This is something I've heard as a rumor, and you know, we know our standard policy on rumors.
Right.
my understanding, or at least some of the decision behind releasing the old world with so many classic models and not doing like full refreshes, was because they didn't have like the capacity to make new models right now, because they're making so many, they're doing so much plastic investment, new model investment for Horus Heresy and for Epic and for 40K, that they're like, we can start this new line and we can repackage models, but like going through and updating designs is just not in the cards right now. So
what I'm going to say, I, even though that might be the case, I think that might have been a good thing, because the old world players we had here, they were using older, like the old model. So they just say, yeah, I dusted off my collection, got it out, and now I'm playing again.
Oh, for
and
sure.
So they just wanted rules to play that were felt more modern. Everybody use air quotes there. Than
sure.
I guess the better way to phrase it is they wanted to feel supported. And yes. I think now that they have that rule set, they feel like, hey, my armies are validated again. Let's play.
Yeah, I definitely think it's worked out from like a nostalgic factor of having these old models and bringing them back and being able to get people playing with them. But I do also think that like in 3 or 4 years, we're going to start, if Old World continues to be popular, we're going to start seeing line refreshes for Scout, you know, for Tomb Kings, for High Elves, for Empire. Like, we're going to start seeing more dual kit releases, I think, that work for both Sigmar and for the Old World. But I don't know. That's speculation.
That from what I understand, from what's been revealed by insiders or, you know, people who have worked at GW, that is unlikely. And that's because each of those lines is considered like their own like financial line. And so that's like why all the Horus Heresy stuff got legended for 40K, because they don't want you crossing over models between the two lines, because then they basically see it as one line cannibalizing the other, which is only true if you run your business badly and don't just consider everything a success.
Yeah.
Like if you have lines competing against each other, that seems like a bad idea.
I've heard that too, and the reason why I say like in several years is because company policies change, you know, like that's, I definitely have heard that that's kind of what's going on right now, but you know, in 5 years that may not be the case.
True. It really seems like they've got so many lines and they're pushing so many of them. I honestly don't think they can keep up. I think that's, you know, especially if they are trying to expand their production capability. And I understand a lot of these projects have long development cycles, so these may have been in development before they knew like how big certain things were going to be, or
for sure,
especially if these lines aren't talking to each other about like, well, we have to produce this, well, we have to produce this, well, obviously 40K is going to get like more attention, you know, more resources devoted to it than anything else. But it's still like, well, we've got to pull a little bit off of 40K so we can get out this like Warcry and Age of Sigmar stuff. But we got to pull a little bit of out of that to get the new models put together for Old World. But we got to pull a little bit of that to make sure we can get enough stuff for people to play Legions Imperialis and Horus Heresy. And eventually it's, you know, and we're seeing like stores aren't getting their full orders. Like they order stuff and they're like, well, they're lucky if they get half of what they ordered.
I don't think that's fully a GW thing, because I've, in some of the gaming stores here, it's not just GWs, but it seems like anything overseas is getting slow to get, and we're getting a lot of out of stocks and low allocations of things.
Yeah, for sure.
And I've even heard some concerns that, because like with books, a lot of GW's books are still printed in China. I think most of them are still printed in China, and those arrive via boat, and most of those boats have been going through the Red Sea, and that's not a great place to be shipping stuff right now. So that's led to other delays as well.
Yeah.
So it just, the world is a bad place and it causes our games to be slow. Let's just Let's just acknowledge that that's what it is. The world is also a very good place because we can get together and play games, but it is a bad place, sure. And that causes bad things to happen. So, and the least of concerns is that your products may arrive a bit late, but everything has side effects that you feel whether you realize it or not.
For sure.
Yeah. So, that's where we are. And, I think we are all very much feeling that. And this summer, it's with the big push of Age of Sigmar stuff. With Age of Sigmar, and I'm assuming Chaos Space Marines will probably be out May, maybe, although it could be sooner because like they were revealing the Tau stuff and then all of a sudden the Tau box was out. So, who knows?
Well, there's still Orcs and Custodes that have to be released, but before probably are going to be released before. Chaos, so I can't imagine. I don't know.
Well, we thought Tau was going to be after Custodes and Orcs too, so who knows?
We know that Custodes and Orcs are both getting launch boxes, so those are going to, like, I don't think they're going to release both of those at the same time or during the same month, so I would say April, May, and then Chaos in June or July, and maybe... Because when did the launch of 40K? That was June.
That was
last
June.
Year. Mm-hmm. So that's when AOS will launch. So yeah, I would guess July, but that's speculation.
Right.
It could be sooner. It could if they double up on other stuff. But it's already almost April. That's what's crazy.
Yeah. Well, and it depends on whether they're getting the. The Orcs and Custodes are getting battle forces. Whether those are considered the same as launch boxes or not, we don't know yet.
True.
They might be. They might not be. We won't know until we see them because we don't generally see them. They're usually like the Kroot one was like the Kroot hunting pack army box. Like it was actually advertised as an army box and the box on it says like army box. Mm-hmm. Battle forces are kind of being pitched differently. So we'll see what happens.
That's true. Yeah.
They could surprise us. We've had double events before, so I wouldn't bet anything past them at this point.
No, that's true. I guess, yeah, you're right. If they're launching battle forces and they intend to keep them like potentially evergreen or available for a longer period of time, I could see them doing a dual codex launch in April and then maybe doing Chaos Space Marines sometime in May. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It could happen. It just depends on... Because I have a feeling we're not going to see a lot of Age of Sigmar releases for the next 2 or 3 months. So they may want those to kind of fill that gap.
That's fair.
Well, let's go ahead and we're going to go ahead and take... Because we've been talking about this for a good chunk of time. So we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. And we'll get to part two where we talk about Crusade and other narrative styles. But if you want to talk with us directly, you can also join our Discord. And the way to join our Discord is to join us on Patreon, which is at patreon.com/preferredenemies. You can join there. We only have one tier. It's at $1 a month. You can give as much or as little as you would like. And basically all of that money goes right back into the show for paying for our recording services and hosting and things like that. And it helps keep the show basically income neutral and allows us to continue doing it. So we really do appreciate that. And we have a good time hanging out on the Discord. And so we'd really love for you to join us there. And, everyone who joins on our Patreon gets access to our Discord. So if you join us again, that's at patreon.com/preferredenemies. We would love to see you as part of the preferred frenemies community. So we're going to go ahead and take a break for sponsor identification. And when we come back, we will talk about our main topic, which is Crusade and other ways to play narratively. See you in a bit.
Miniatures. We build them. We paint them. We love them.
That's why we also want to get them to the battle and back again safely.
And that's where Kara Multicase comes in. They offer a complete model storage and transport system.
They offer a wide selection of core trays for standard size miniatures, as well as custom cut trays for specific models.
KR's trays are made of a soft foam, available in a variety of colors that won't scratch or snag your models.
And to protect the foam, the trays are carried in easily stackable, swappable cardboard cases.
They also offer a full range of Kaiser bags, backpacks, and aluminum cases for transporting your KR cases.
You can even choose from pre-built tray selections to suit your army, or use the autofill app to find just the right trays for your particular force.
Whatever your game, 40K, X-Wing, Worm Hordes, or Historicals, KR Multicase has the cases to fit your needs.
You can find out more at krmulticase.com. KR Multicase, soft foam for your figures, hard cases for the soft foam. Are you tired of playing on a boring battlefield? Do you want to step up the quality of your gaming table and make your battle look real?
Then you need to check out the battle mats from Game Mat. Their professionally designed rubber-based mats are just what your gaming table needs.
Available in a variety of styles, with everything from rolling grasslands to urban war zones, winter wastelands to alien deserts, there's a Game Mat mat to fit any kind of terrain.
Their mats are padded, anti-slip, waterproof, and when you're done rolling dice and battling on your mat, just roll it up and stick it in the convenient carrying bag for easy transport and storage.
And if you don't have a gaming table, they've got you covered with their folding G-board portable gaming area and their line of pre-painted resin terrain.
If you're ready to upgrade your gaming table, head over to www.gamemat.eu and find the gaming mat that's right for you.
Game Mat, giving your armies the battlefield they deserve.
And we're back. That means it's time for our main topic, which is digging into Crusade and looking at a few other narrative options besides. If you are not familiar with what Crusade is, maybe you are brand new to 40K, or maybe you've been almost entirely focused on competitive tournament match play, etc., or you know a little bit about Crusade, but you want to learn more, let's basically run down what Crusade is, how it works, and then we'll talk about what we like and don't like about it, and then we will finish up by talking about some alternatives to Crusade. So Crusade was introduced with 9th edition, and it was basically listed as the narrative way to play 9th edition, and then it got ported into 10th edition as well. And the conceit about Crusade is that you are building an army, and that army gains experience over time, and the units within level up, gain new abilities, they get improvements, or they might also develop scars and lose some abilities because of damage they've taken. And that over time, you will end up, you'll start with like a very basic force and end with a very, like a large, powerful army. And that, and you know, we've kind of talked about the mechanics before, but basically, every time a unit fights, it gains experience. It will also gain additional experience for doing certain things in game. And then there are several different level steps, like going from battle ready, which is your basic force, you know, unit enters play at this, up to blooded after gaining 6 XP, up to battle hardened at 16, up to heroic at 31, and up to and legendary at 51 plus. It is very unlikely that you're going to see a lot of heroic and legendary, because that's a lot of experience.
I mean, I will agree and disagree. I mean, I think after about a year of playing a couple games a month, our group might hit that. We might hit in this fall, but it'll be after like 2 or 3 campaigns.
Yeah, you're not going to see one at the end of a single campaign. You're going to have to take an army through multiple campaigns or some very, very long campaigns to get that level. Because most units are only going to gain 2-3 XP per battle.
We've found ways to gain. I mean, if you do all your agendas right and you're playing for XP, we've seen units get up to 6.
Yeah, you can, because you've got, because like I said, for every battle, if a unit takes part, it gets an experience. For every third enemy unit it has destroyed across multiple battles, it doesn't have to be within a single battle, it gains an XP. And then at the end of a game, you can pick a unit that was part of the battle and say that unit is marked for greatness, they get 3 XP. So right off the bat, if a unit kills well enough, they can get 5 XP. And then, as you pointed out, Dennis, there's the agenda system, which is in Crusade play basically takes the place of like secondary objectives that we would see in like matched play, where you pick one or two or three, depending on the game size, things that your army is going to try to do. And then any units that take part in that agenda and succeed at it to some level will gain additional experience. So yeah, you can like 6-7 experience, yeah, depending on the agenda. You can actually get quite a bit. Yeah.
Some agendas do 2. Some can actually go up to 3. Like that, just pick 3 units, stay alive. As long as you're above half strength, you can get 3 experience just for that one agenda, and double that with another one that can get up to 3. We have some, I'm going to use air quotes, min-maxers who are very good at picking agendas to get the experience they want on certain units. So certain units on their armies are flying in experience while others are now lacking behind.
Mm-hmm. And with Crusade forces, something else that comes into play is you may have more units than you can actually take in a battle. Because like while you start out in 10th edition, you start at what, 1,000 points?
Yeah.
Over time, you will also earn requisition points. So you start off with 5, and I believe you earn 1 after every battle. Some agendas or faction specific rules, we'll get into that in a bit, can give you more, and you can spend those to increase what they call supply limits. You start at a supply limit of 1,000 points. You can take 1,000 points of models, and then over time you can expand that, and as you spend points to gain, what, I think it's 200 points per requisition. Yeah. You can end up with a much larger force, but often the game size will still be 1,000. So now you have to pick and choose which units you take out of your full force to fit into that 1,000.
Well, like, I'll toss out my example here is I've already spent up a couple requisition points to get my list to, or my battle force up to 1,400 points, and that allowed me to bring another squad of Terminators into it. And in this last thing, we played 2 games in a day. The first game, I had my snipers in on my list because they've been there from the start, and I wanted to take out some leaders. And then I moved to playing a monstrous Tyranid list where the snipers are not going to be as effective. So I dropped them and a couple characters from my squad to give me enough points that I could include the Terminators that I had on my roster ahead of time. So it just gives you flexibility that you can change up your roster when you want between games.
Yeah, that's actually one of my favorite parts of this whole Crusade system is, you know, you bring all your stuff, and then you can kind of tailor your list for your opponent or for like what mission you're trying to do. It just gives you much more flexibility. As someone who has way, way, way too many models, yeah, it's nice to be able to kind of rotate them through.
Yeah. Now, a couple of things, like, there are some units that will never get experience. They will never get any better. One of those is, like, swarms, summon units, fortifications. These are things that just don't have enough. They either have no mines or they have so little that it doesn't matter. So they will never gain experience. They'll never get honors. They'll always be what they are. The other one is epic heroes. So any of those named unique characters, the game actually kind of dissuades you from taking them because they will never get any better. They already have like all their special abilities built in. Now, there are a couple, like one or two codexes that don't mind if you take them. For example, Dark Angels actually does give you some mild benefits if you pick the right characters.
Right. And that's mostly to show that this is your character stories, and epic heroes have already had their story, so they don't need to build onto it, and you don't get to build onto their story, really. So the epic heroes you include, either there for game purposes or, I'll say it, an air quote, side character for your characters that you're leveling up. And hopefully by the end, if you reach legendary, they might be on par with what some of these epic heroes can do.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's one thing we've noticed, we've played in 2 U.S. Open narrative campaigns. I know you guys have played more. I've played in 2. You've played in, what, like 3 or 4 at this point?
A bunch.
Then, like, I've played in a Crusade League locally. I know, Dennis, you're obviously playing in a Crusade League locally. You can, like, units can start to get kind of ridiculous over time. Because there's some, like, decently good abilities, and even, like, a small tweak, like, having weapons suddenly have better AP or better strength can make a big difference. Or being able to gain a relic. Because that's one thing. You cannot take enhancements in the 10th edition version of Crusade unless you spend a requisition point. And then once you do, that enhancement is locked into that character. They can't change it and nobody else can have it.
Which is interesting and nice, because one thing that also does is you can pick an enhancement from the main book, or if you have a codex, from your codex. So you don't have to lock that into your detachment, because in regular game, you pick your detachment, your enhancements are based on the detachment. In Crusade, you just lock in the enhancement you want, and then it doesn't matter what detachment you're playing, because the enhancement's already on your character. So it switches things around, which means you can get some interesting combos of picking an enhancement from a different detachment than the one you're going to be playing.
Right. There is also one thing you also do is if a unit has been completely wiped out during a game, you do make a check to see if they are out of action. What that means is at the end of the battle, for any out of action, you make out of action tests for any of those destroyed units. You roll a D6. On a 2+, nothing happens. They're fine. They'll be right back the next battle. No issues. On a 1, you get to choose one of two things. Either they lose a battle honor. Or yeah, you can only select this if they already have an upgrade, they lose the upgrade. The other is they can take a battle scar. Now that they still keep the experience they had, which is one thing I do like about this version over 9th edition, is that you could have a unit do a lot of things, and then if they failed an out of action test, they could actually lose all the experience they would just gain for that battle. So that's nice. But otherwise, you can get a battle scar, which may be things like you can't advance and you lose an inch of your movement rate, or you subtract one from all your battle shock, leadership, or out of action tests. Also, that could be bad. Things like that. So you are telling basically, like you said, Dennis, you are telling the story of your army. Your army is leveling up, gaining abilities, and then that can get even more focused if you play one of the particular Crusade settings they have. And right now in 10th edition, we've had two. We've got the Tyrannic War, which is in the core book and also in a separate book, or the Pariah Nexus, which we reviewed a couple of episodes back. And those have their own sets of upgrades, sometimes geared towards particular units. There are also Crusade specific relics. There's a few generic ones, and then there's also, or no, I guess there aren't any generic ones. I think they are all tied to either your codex or the particular campaign you're playing in. And most of those tend to be locked to, like, any character can have artificer level relics, but then there's antiquity and legendary, which require you to be at heroic or legendary levels. And those are where you're going to see the really cool stuff. Like, hey, you want a vortex grenade? That's a legendary relic from the Tyrannic War.
I was excited to see one relic. I was like, oh, this is a cool relic. It gives my character and his unit lone operative. And then I realized, oh, that's antiquity. That means I have to get to heroic, which is 31 experience, and my character has 11. Okay.
Yeah.
Something to build towards.
Right. It will be.
That is also one thing about playing Crusade, is that you, like, let's say you have a Crusade campaign. You've got player A, who is a new player. Player B has been playing through three different campaigns and has their character up to they have those legendary relics. Well, obviously that army is going to be way more powerful. Like, player B's army is going to be way more powerful than player A's army. So to try to even the score, Every time you go up a level or get an upgrade, a unit will, there's a, basically you have a, effectively a character sheet for every unit, and that's where you'll track their XP. That's where you'll track their upgrades. That's also where you will track how many crusade points they are. And that basically every time they level up, every time they get an upgrade, they gain a crusade point, one or more. And you can figure out the crusade point value of your force by, like, here are the units I'm taking in this battle. Here's all their total crusade points. Done. You compare the two levels of crusade points, and then that determines what the difference, or what the difference between those determines how many blessings the player with the lower total has. And that could be, if they're pretty close, could be nothing. If they're very different, it could be as many as four. And that could be starting with extra command points, gaining extra XP at the end of a battle, having an extra agenda you can acquire. Every, you know, being able to start with cover in your deployment zone, adding one to charge rolls once per battle, or every one of your, or like picking three units and they gain scout 6-inch, stuff like that. Like, these are things that you can gain to try to at least mitigate the difference, give you a little bit of a leg up so you're not completely getting rolled.
The thing we've seen here, because in ours, we have one Tyranid player especially who's like, got so much experience. He's won all of his games so far, but in both his second and third games, he had enough crusade points ahead of his two opponents, and one of them was me, that we got to use blessings. And I don't know how I feel about blessings. I like the concept, but we might get into this part later. It's just something else to remember that ends up getting forgot. Unless it's something simple as like, oh, 2 CP at the start of the battle. Okay, cool. But like, I picked Hellfire Shells, and he had monsters, and I forgot to fire my Hellfire Shells at his monster, even though they were available. So it probably would not have played a big difference in the game as we talked it out, but just the fact that it's another thing to remember, you need to make sure you remember that you have it.
Yeah, there's a lot of bookkeeping in Crusade. Like, that's, to me, that's the downside, is you really need to have, like, a full roster of all of the units available for you. You need to then have your list for the game that you're playing. You need to have a way to track units killed, if the unit died, how bad, you know, if the unit fully died or partially died. You need to track agendas. You need to track upgrades. You need to track, like, what mission priorities you're doing, if it's a specific crusade, you know, narrative. Like, there's just a lot extra to track. I like the system, but it's very, it's not conducive to the way I've played it, which so far I've played it in, like, weekend events, like at the US Opens. And that's just a lot to deal with in a short period of time. I think if you're doing it over, you know, in a casual setting where you're playing one game a week, two games a week, I think that's a lot less of a problem, but it's just a lot more things you have to track, and you have to, a lot more bookkeeping involved.
Yeah. And the bookkeeping isn't as bad because, like, right now, like, how many guys did you kill? You can either keep it, like, my second game, I was keeping tallies on my little character cards, and then I'll print out new ones for next time I play. Or if it's a short enough game, or you can just remember it and then just mark it down afterwards when you do all the rest of your bookkeeping. But like you said, Kevin, it is more conducive to having like a big break between the games. And like we took lunch and then we did bookkeeping over lunch in between our two games this past week. And that proved, I mean, we got it done. And also, since everyone has phones, I was the only one using paper. Everyone else was updating theirs on our little spreadsheet thing that we have online. The bookkeeping is a thing. And yes, I agree, on a weekend event, it never feels like you have enough time between rounds to get it all done. But if you have your own set group where you can like build in those spaces and take the time, because one thing is to use the bookkeeping to get the upgrades. Then the other one is just to get it in your memory of, I have this, I have this, I have this. Like, I am very thankful I remembered all of my guys that got the Feel No Pain 5 up. It came in handy, and that's not normally something Dark Angels have. So remembering your rules is already a big thing in the game, but when you've got Crusade and have other things to remember, it does help to have that time before the game starts, where you've got some prep time in your mind to start reminding yourself who has what, as opposed to having to look everything up.
Right. And let's that brings up another point, is that as of right now, Crusade has no app support. It is something that you are going to have to manage on your own. GW has not released anything for the 40K app that handles what Crusade does. Whether that's coming eventually or not, we don't know. It would be nice that, you know, when we mentioned in the Prior Nexus review that there's a code in the back of the book, but it doesn't unlock anything, or it doesn't unlock anything yet. It might at some time. I do want to say that Goonhammer has created a web-based app. You don't have to download anything, but it's called Administratum, and you can sign up and you can create your own campaign and track your roster there.
We actually looked at that, and there is one caveat, unless they've changed in the past couple months, of you can play in the campaigns there, but if you want to really create your own and have it be fully supported, you do have to join their Patreon, which I can understand, and that's not that big of a deal. And if we had gone that route, I would have done that, because I mean, it's a good app, but it's not fully free. At least one person has to be the Patreon to kind of kick everything off, and that money's used to support the app, so I don't see a problem with doing that.
Right. It's just you have to, you know, no, it's not, it is free to sign up, but it may not be free to do your own thing entirely. But right. As you said, only need somebody's got to support it.
Yeah. And so whoever is your campaign master, they'd probably be the best ones to have access to the app to get everything set up. Then everyone can just sign up and use it.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, there is a lot to keep track of, and we haven't even gotten into the additional portions that are or codex specific. So, for example, the most recent Tau codex we looked at, it has its own set of agendas, it has its own set of relics, it has its own set of battle traits that you can gain, and they're different. You know, they're split out separately based on like what kind of unit it is. So, like, battlesuit units have a list of traits that they can get as an upgrade. And also, all of these lists of traits, whether they're in the core book or one of the campaign books or codex, they do have like a D6 value next to them. You can roll on it, or you can choose what is thematically appropriate. You are not forced to roll. Sometimes it's fun to roll, but a lot of times people will tend to pick one that is relevant to the game they just played or what they're doing with their character.
Yeah, and I will say I'm more fond of picking something relevant to what happened in the game, but our group here decided they wanted to roll for everything. So, like, I have an Inquisitor who has a deathly frightful aura, so he gives -1 leadership to people within 6 inches. And he's in a group that's never going to get into melee.
It's a nice to have. That's all. It's a nice to have.
Well, it just means he looks scary.
Right. I mean, he is an Inquisitor, so that is thematic.
It is. It right. Kind of is, yeah.
But yeah, they have their own, like, so there's battlesuit traits, ethereal traits, traits for Pathfinder strike team and breacher teams, a set of traits for Kroot. There's their own sets of relics. They have their own things that they can spend requisitions on. So, for example, like if you have a crisis or broadside unit in your order of battle, which is your list of units, you can spend 2 requisition points to trade it out for a crisis ghost keel or riptide suit. And then that unit comes in at the same XP level, because the idea is it's the same pilot who was in the first suit is now just getting into a different, bigger suit or a different kind of suit, and has all the same benefits they had before. And because they limit it to another battle suit unit, they could still have the same upgrades from the previous iteration. They'll have, you know, they have things like that, or a number of them have this. You can pick a unit that comes in at a higher XP level. Like, I know the Dark Angels have one for coming in.
For blooded. The Terminators or the Raven Wing, yeah.
Yeah. Tau have the same thing for the prototype system. basically, when you add a battle suit unit, you can have them start at 6 XP, and they have to start with a battle trait from the battle suit units list, because the idea is these suits are coming in with a upgrade that hasn't been tested yet. They have their own agendas, because those are like their own ways of that are important to them for earning XP. But also, the faction-specific ones are interesting, because a lot of the factions, it was not so much in the early days of 9th edition, but like in the later codexes, and we are seeing them in the 10th edition codexes, is each faction has its own little like strategic mini game that it's playing. So, for example, again, the Tau one, it's the most recent one we've done, so we'll talk about that. When you start playing a Tau Crusade army, not only do you do all the things where you start up your army and you set up all their Crusade roster sheets and things, you also have a sheet for generating a star system that the Tau are trying to expand into. And for you roll up how many planets that system has, and then for each planet, like what are the system's inhabitants like? What type of planet is it? What is the core world in this planet, in this system like? And then all those different kinds of worlds, they have their own diplomatic and military power. And that's how much power you have to accrue to take those planets over. Which you earn that through, you get a military power after you finish if you finish a game, and then your agendas may give you more military power or more diplomatic power, and that becomes a pool of points that you spend to take over planets. And then when you take over planets, they give you extra abilities that which may be more military power, more requisition, or allowing you to use certain requisition abilities for free. But if you take them over with a military victory, you may have to roll a d6, and it turns out you fought too hard and you raised the planet, so you get no benefit. Like, there's a whole thing. And when you finish taking over a system, you've done all the planets, then you generate a new system and you keep going and do another one. That's the Tau one, and all their specific agendas are tied into earning that diplomatic or military power. The Tyranids have one that's all about the different stages of a Tyranid invasion, where it's like we're in first invading the planet, then we're killing the defense, and then we're eating everything and digesting it. And so each stage gives benefits to particular kinds of units, because those are the units that a Tyranid invasion would use at those particular stages of their takeover of a system. And so you have like all these little mini games and things you're tracking. That is more paperwork and bookkeeping that you have to do.
But at the same time, that does add flavor to the narrative you're doing.
Yeah, very much so. I like that aspect. I've played through the Tau one because I think my first year at the US Open, not last year, because last year I was playing Death Guard, but the first year I played Tau. And yeah, I was doing like the system takeover thing. I had most of a system taken. I had over half of it taken over by the end of the weekend. Like, again, it's one of those things. If you played this over several weeks, it would seem like this slow plodding campaign to like take over a whole system. You do it in a weekend, and it feels a little less impactful. This wasn't a big deal. I don't know what everyone's worried about. We just took over the system. Like, no problem.
Took the Emperor 100 years to conquer the universe. Jeez.
But now that we're talking about this, I'll put in my one gripe about it, is that, like, when you did your Tau for that system, I believe I had Votan, and I could go do mining stuff and get things, but I got nowhere in a weekend because it just wasn't enough time to build things up. But like then when I did the US Open Grand Narrative, I took Votan there as well. I had nothing. I had no other special things to do because those are only in the codexes. So if you do not have a codex for your army, you don't get to do the other fun little narrative for your faction.
Right. And because those narrative bits do sometimes have direct crusade benefits, it does lead to a feeling of have versus have not. And that is not great.
It was kind of interesting with mine, like at the Grand Narrative, I was playing World Eaters, who do not have a codex, so they didn't have any of the extra minigame stuff. So I ended up just, you know, it's World Eaters. I ended up killing a lot of models, killing a lot of units. So I ended up gaining a lot of XP pretty quickly. And like by the final game, I was like, cool. Well, I've got Scout and I've got Feel No Pain and I've got Lethal Hits. And I've, oh, cool. I just made the Blood Tithe mechanic of my army useless. Like, that was literally the last game. I'm like, I don't need to track this because everybody has all these upgrades now. And like, I can't bring back Angron because he's not in my list. So it's like, eh? Yeah, it was just interesting. I hope that as they add more stuff, like they add in like more specific things for some of these armies. Because like in World Leaders, it was just like, well, cool. I'm going to take all the upgrades that make me better in melee, which is what my army does.
Here's my complaint or hope. Like when they'd said Prime Nexus would have stuff for all the factions, I was expecting they would have a book of all the little faction mini games.
I guess that's
no, yeah. Of course not.
No,
but I mean, that goes back to our first half thing of saying it would be nice to, when they release just something, just put it all out there in like a, maybe a bigger book to have it. So then we had our tome, and I would like that better than the slow leak. Cause I want to play the mini games, even though it's more bookkeeping.
Yeah. So like, I like the, I think I like the concept of Crusade. The idea of like building your personal force and leveling it up and having like these units gain abilities that are relevant to them. And especially if they have a codex and they do have faction specific gains, I think those are all very cool. And it is neat to watch your force grow. It's fun to play the mini games. Like it depending on like some of them, like the Death Guard one from 9th edition was garbage. It was make a plague. And it was just like, oh yeah, your warlord can have this plague that gives him a special ability. And that's it. Like if there wasn't any big full mini game to play, whereas others like Sisters of Battle had like the entire path for a sister to become a living saint, or, you know, you get like, Chaos Space Marines have this entire thing of like balancing their resources and their proper supplication to the dark gods to gain power, and like there's an entire set of tracking that you have to do there.
Chaos Knights was super interesting.
Didn't you, there were like multiple like circles that you were trying to like descend
right
in?
as you went through the different circles by doing different things for your god, you got more benefits and blessings until you were like fully, I don't say fully tainted, but that's the only words that come to mind.
Mm-hmm. And like I know they're like sometimes like that's where they would put the abilities. Like back in the day, the Chaos Space Marine had like the Chaos Boons table where like you kill somebody in a challenge. Okay, great. Roll to see what happens. Oh no, I'm a Chaos Spawner. Yay, I'm a Demon Prince, you know, or I just grew a third arm out of my head. Now I can like shoot an extra time or something. Like they moved all that into narrative play. That's also where a lot of the older like relics were put like into Crusade play, because it's like these relics are maybe not balanced for matched play, but people still want to have them around, so we'll put them in a narrative game where balance is a little less important. And I don't want to say like the game is unbalanced, but it's like we don't need a balance. People are playing with a different goal. They're not necessarily playing the tightest, meanest armies they can, so we can have that wiggle room of, hey, this one guy has this ability. And he has this ability because he's fought several battles, and you're going to be fighting again. Like if you bring him, like he's earned that upgrade. And those are cool. I like all those things about Crusade. I like the idea of having Crusade missions with agendas, and having like, which can shape like either you're going to go for all the XP, or maybe you're going to lean hard into your faction specific ones for that mini game.
Well, I will jump back a little bit. You said Crusade missions with agendas.
Uh-huh.
The missions themselves, I don't think we've touched on, but they are rather interesting as well, because each mission tells its own story in a way. Like for an example, one we got this time was an escape mission where the attacker does not even start on the board, does not have a deployment zone. And the defender, their deployment zone is close to the attacker's area or the board edge where the attacker is going to come in on. And the defender goes first, and you win by getting at least, well, a 4,000 point game, at least 450 of your models, points of your models, onto the other side of the board into what would be an escape zone, aka a deployment zone, would we call it, but the escape zone, and anything that's not battle or less than anything that is not below half strength counts for your point total. And so it's like, okay, well, I've got to get half my army over there. But since you go first and the attackers have to walk on, it gives you the advantage to where you can run out there and set up, and the attacker's just busy chasing you, trying to shoot you down and like keep you from escaping. So it provided a very interesting play and on a mission, but it was one that you never find on a competitive list because it's not balanced. And you'll find a lot of these aren't fully balanced. They're more, oh, this is just kind of fun. Let's see what happens here. And that's one of the things I like.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. And I do think we talked about when we reviewed Pariah Nexus that the missions, I think, in Pariah Nexus are still a bit better than the ones in the Tyrannic War because there's less like win or like binary win-loss conditions. Like,
yeah, and we're doing Tyrannic War.
Yeah, yeah. So Tyrannic War has some where it's like, okay, if you complete this, you get like 90 points. If you fail, your opponent gets 90 points.
That's why I was saying the 450, because that was the 60 win points for the defender and 40 for the attacker. So, and then the step below that was a tie, and the step below that was defender wins. So, right. Yeah, it was totally based on one person is going to win, or you do have this middle section where you'll tie, but you have one goal that each person's trying to do, either right. Get off or kill them.
And so, like, you know, I think having a completely different pool of missions is neat, and you could still generate missions from like the Leviathan deck if you wanted to, and sure. Then layer agendas on top of that. Like, there's nothing saying you have to use the Crusade missions, or there's the bunker missions that they've been putting out in White Dwarf, which are also very narrative focused. You could absolutely play those with Crusade. Crusade is more of a army management system than it is specifically a full campaign system. The Crusade books do have a campaign system in them, but it's basically it's win battle, earn points, multiple phases. Whoever wins a phase gets another pool of points. And then at the end of the campaign, whoever has won the most phases and earned the most points wins. But for the most part, Crusade is how you manage your army in a campaign rather than the campaign itself. And I think that's one of the parts where Crusade, after playing it and examining it and playing some other alternative systems, I feel like it loses me a little bit. And for lack of a better way to phrase this, because damn it, Crusade feels like playing with yourself. In that, specifically what I mean is, like, the minigame. Like, the Tau minigame, me taking over systems, has no impact. Like, when you are playing as a Votan and you're doing your, like, collecting resources by mining planets and stuff, there's no interaction there. The thing I'm doing is completely separate from the thing you're doing.
Right. And I will say, like, in ours, like, one of the Tyranids was going after a planet, and they were on their track in the game against me, that if they tabled me on their track, that planet gets to be destroyed for biomass. And so, I mean, they did get to include, I guess, me as part of their narrative, but it's not a cohesive narrative for a group as much as it's your own individual one, and you're just kind of intersecting at different points with the others.
Yeah, I get that. I also don't know that there's necessarily a way around that, because the GW wants this to be a system that can be used by anybody, any number of people can drop in and out. It's never going to be as tailored as, like, if the four of us were going to do a crusade or a narrative mission with, like, our specific armies. We could absolutely do that, where it's like, okay, Richard's Tyranids want to harvest this planet, but, you know, Rob's Tau want to recruit this planet, so these battles directly influence that. GW has to keep this much more generic so they can run it for any factions, any armies, any size, people dropping in and out, any length. It's I get it that as a criticism, but I also like it's the goal of what they're trying to do with it. I think it's a little bit different than what a custom narrative event would be.
Right. And that would be the other half of it is, like you said, Kevin, they have put out narrative books before that kind of say you should be using these factions in them. But I hate to admit it, I ignore a lot of those because they're normally not my factions. So as I guess we're saying is the Crusade is fine, but if you do want a more tailored one, that might be something you need to kind of build on your own with your group of how that tailored narrative would flow.
Mm-hmm. I think the other thing, like the couple of other things that I fall down a little bit Crusade, or at least Crusade doesn't do as well as I think may have been originally intended. I do agree that I don't think the blessing system is sufficient for balancing between somebody who's won a lot, who's played a ton of Crusade versus somebody who hasn't. It's still going to be a hard go because you're just talking about you know, it's like, yes, these like one time little boons are kind of nice, but when your opponent has units that have just way better abilities that are on all the time, it's going to be a harder go.
I will agree with that, and I'll also expand on it of sometimes the people who have a lot of experience are the better players, and giving more blessings won't really help. I mean, it will help if there was enough blessings, but like we're in the point where we get like one with how much difference there is, and it did not seem to make an impact on the game itself. Because like you said, Rob, one blessing is like getting one temporary upgrade on one unit, it feels like, while they might have upgrades on like four. I mean, a crusade point is an extra upgrade on a unit. So technically that means they have five extra upgrades and you're getting one temporary one. So
yeah, it's not enough.
Yeah.
In ninth edition, the blessing was just, you got more command points to start with. Given how many stratagems that edition had, that might have been better, but I don't know if the way 10th edition is built that is sufficient. Also, that it's not, there's not just like one set of blessings. Prionexus has a completely different set and a larger set of blessings than Tyrannic War, but you don't get more blessings to you like at any one time. So it's not, it doesn't necessarily help balance things. It's just a larger pool to choose from. Another thing with Crusade is the idea of an order of battle, which is all the units in your roster, and then picking a list to tailor based on point, like the points of the battle, is very cool. And your bless or like your upgrades and everything don't enter into that. You can like whatever unit you paid for it when you got it, that's how much it's going to cost. That's cool. I do think it worked better in 9th edition than 10th, and that is because power level didn't get updated as frequently as points. And now with points being very fluid, like we've already seen the issue of, hey, if your points cause you to go over on your order of battle, well, you just gain that many points in your order of battle. But that doesn't necessarily fix it for the games you're going to play. I don't think you get to play it at like 30 points up because your opponent or you know, because your list got updated and your opponent's didn't. I also just the fact that like in the past, it was like, you know, a power level was equivalent to like somewhere between 15 to 20 points, and power levels didn't get updated, which was its own problem. Power as games as armies got rebalanced, their power levels, I think, got rebalanced once in the history of 9th edition. 10th edition is better in that regard, but it also means that points are already with fixed point costs per like unit size with no war gear options or things like that. It's sometimes harder to make a list that fills out 1,000 points, and you have the disadvantage that you cannot take enhancements to fill in the gaps unless you can spend requisition on them.
And they're leveled up enough to have that.
Right. So I mean, that's an issue.
Point fiddliness is a problem. I haven't had to deal with it. I don't think any of our group has, because the only one who had points changes, I'm using air quotes there, was me with Dark Angels, because none of all the other factions were were hit for the units they were using. And for me, it didn't matter too much because I already had bought the extra requisition points to increase my order of battle to above 1,000. But since nobody's changing their units out, it seems like we're not running into that issue that you could have if you were had spent up to like have like 1,500 and you're trying to swap out your characters and suddenly, oh, you built your list. Oh, well, now that one doesn't work. So now I have to build it this way. So,
right.
And then finally, I think the one issue I'm not going to bring up is the when Crusade was first floated in 9th edition, they're like, well, you can play your Crusade army even in a match play game. Just get your opponent's permission. That is not happening. That never happened. No one ever did that. No one ever did that. That was, and that got quietly swept under the rug and never mentioned again. But no, I think the one thing, the biggest hurdle for Crusade, and I've heard it from players who are playing playing narrative campaign games right now, but not using Crusade, is the bookkeeping. The bookkeeping is the least fun part of Crusade. And as you said, Dennis, it is very easy to forget things that you have bought or forget, like whether they're blessings or upgrades. Keeping track and remembering what has what and how many, like, and keeping track of your requisition points and your XP and your Crusade points, and then add the mini games into that. Like I said, the Tau one, you've got military and domestic or military and diplomatic points to track and all these planets to track and moving from one to the other. And it's like, there's a lot to manage between games and then that impact the game directly.
Yeah. My take on that is I think it works, but I think it works for long-term group play where you play a couple games a week, or like a game a week, couple games a month, something like that. Not for a weekend. A weekend doesn't give you enough downtime to get all the bookkeeping mm-hmm. and stuff done.
I agree. The schedule for the U.S. Opens usually had 15 minutes?
No, like 30 minutes to an hour.
30 minutes to an hour. But they would say, by the way, you have to have your bookkeeping done before you start the next round. Here's your lunch break. Do your
math. I mean, we're seeing the impact on that with the Dallas Open this year. Like, they're playing the games at 1,000 points. And, we played at 2,000 previously. That's how they're fixing it, which smaller games isn't necessarily a bad thing, but they're limited with what types of games they can play if they're going to try to do this over a weekend.
Right.
With 1,000 points, one, there's going to be less bookkeeping because you have less units. And two, the game should go faster. So I can easily see where they're doing there. And also, I still like 1,000 point games because you have to make more decisions on your list because you can't take everything.
No, I do too. But let's think about it. And I haven't looked at the schedule, so I don't know. But what was the cost of the U.S. Open? Like $70, $80, I don't remember, $90, something like that.
A lot.
You're gonna get
over 100.
Okay, $100. So you're gonna get 4-5 games at 1,000 points over a weekend for $100. I can see why some people are like, that isn't worthwhile to pay for. So I don't know. It's limiting is what I'm saying. All I'm saying is it's a limiting factor because instead of getting more games in, because if they were like, hey, play 1,000 points, this narrative thing, and we're going to get 6 games in or 7 games in over 2 days, that's cool. But by having to be with all the bookkeeping for Crusade, you have to shrink the points down. You have to give more time for the other stuff in between games. And it's just, I don't know. It makes it as the accountant of the group, bookkeeping is never fun. it just isn't. And I'd rather spend more time playing games, especially if I'm going to pay $100 for an event. Also, I know why they do it, because more downtime means you go to the store and you spend more money, which is absolutely what's going to happen. But that's my fault.
So Kevin, do I need to be the things that you don't need it?
I mean, you can do that. I'm still going to buy stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, you should be glad I'm not going to be in Dallas, because, I'd be there and be like, do it. Do it. Buy the thing. Do it. You know you want to.
I think Kevin and I both did that for each other when we were in Atlanta.
We did. Yeah.
We did. You're both enablers. I think also having 1,000-point games means like actually increasing your requisition to bring in new units is easier to do as opposed to like starting at 2,000 and having to bring maybe 3,000 points of army rather than just bringing maybe 2,000 points and starting at 1,000. So I can definitely see from a logistics standpoint, it's a little bit easier for people who are traveling.
I mean, I'll agree and disagree at the same time of I'm looking at Votan now because I've been playing Dark Angels and Space Marine stuff for a while now because that's what our crusade here is doing. But I miss my Votan. I'm probably going to take them. It is so hard to shoehorn the points into a 1,000-point army like I would like. So it's like I can extend the build more things, but I'll probably still just use this 1,000-point list. That's it. And so yeah, that goes back to your army building thing without having the fiddlies, Rob.
Right.
You're not going to build your Jaegers and include them in your 1,000-point list?
No.
So yeah, it's like Crusade, it's not a perfect system by any means. I do think it's an interesting system. And I do think that it's cool that GW has presented it as an option, as like an officially supported option for narrative play. Because that has been one of the problems in the past with their like things that they've released as like supplements that seem geared towards narrative play is that they're sometimes kind of a one and done and then just discarded. Whereas Crusade has had ongoing support, and it is one of the things that actually makes the codexes worth buying, even if it didn't have the data sheets in there, like, which is why, like, if they want to release books that are just fluff and Crusade, so it's like the purely narrative portion of your army, I think those would be perfectly good sales because the people who want to play Crusade with those factions would buy them up. I think they would be great. I think my other issue is that Crusade is, it is a narrative for your army, but it is not an overall narrative system. I think the Pariah Nexus campaign gets closer to it by having like the Blackstone recovery and then having another campaign system that this layers on top of. But I would say you could play that campaign and not engage with the rest of Crusade as far as like the leveling up and things like that at all. Like you could play the Pariah Nexus campaign and not bother with any of the other now they do have alliance upgrades which tend to lean into Crusade specific stuff like extra requisition or extra supply limit or extra Crusade blessings, things like that, so they definitely want to lean into that and have you use it, but you could theoretically play without that. But there are other ways that you can manage an army in a narrative sense, outside of Crusade. One of the very basics would be an Escalation League, which I know you played in, Kevin, like right around the start of the edition.
Yeah. One of the local stores did an Escalation League, and it just went up, I think, 500 points each week. So we started at 500, and I think by the end we were all the way up to 2,000. Yeah, and it was fun because it definitely escalated what you could bring, and you know, there wasn't like necessarily a specific narrative to the event, but you could build in, you know, kind of your own narrative to it. And, you know, you had each week you had like a set engagement. So like it was fun, but there wasn't really necessarily a narrative component to it. It was much more like, hey, we're going to slow build new armies for 10th edition.
Right. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be narrative, but I think it is a way that you could definitely start like, hey, we're starting with small engagements. You could even theoretically do something like that if you don't mind people learning a new system for like a game or two. We're going to start with a couple of kill teams, so like maybe build one unit this week, build a second unit the next week, and then we're going to move to a 500 like a combat patrol scale game and then go from there. In fact, speaking of combat patrol, I want to say it's either the newest or the previous White Dwarf actually had rules for doing like three-player or multiplayer combat patrol games. Like there would be ways to work, and also I've seen suggestions for working like combat patrol games into a larger narrative, even into a larger narrative campaign like one that's in Pariah Nexus. Another option for doing a narrative campaign is what we're doing in Hours, which is just fixed faction, but you can change your list. And we're playing 1,000-point games, so like, and you know who you're going to be playing, so you can tailor your list. And there's no bookkeeping. That's, I think, one of the benefits is there's no bookkeeping. But the side thing is what we're running that on top of is where the actual real narrative comes in, is that this is actually apparently the second league this group has been doing. This is the first time I've taken part. But they're using the 8th edition Urban Conquest set, where you had a city map that you built out of cards and that were all like in these plastic pockets, so you could put stickers on the individual pockets and keep track of like, okay, so everybody, here's the territory in the city that everybody is controlling. And then there's an entire system of like certain sections of the city are worth more campaign points. Certain ones are worth more strategic points, which you use to do basically between game stratagems effectively. And so there's a point tracker. And if you ever lose, if your faction ever loses all the territory that they're holding, you have to, like, you can come back in with a new faction. But nobody's reached that point yet.
What was the game? What was the system that GW used to publish with, like, the hex tiles?
Planetary Empires.
I still have my set of those.
Same here. This was basically that, but with cards. And more cards than there are spots on the city map, so no two city maps will necessarily have all the same locations. And it has like an entire set of sheets of like removable decals for putting on these kind of, you know, kind of like the old, remember the old color forms stickers that you would like? Yeah, this was basically that, but for this plastic sheet. This one's been very interesting because while the individual games have been mostly playing, you know, just they're standard games, although we're using missions from the Urban Conquest book, which it's weird playing like 8th edition style missions and 8th edition style scoring with 10th edition armies, because like I have to kind of remember like, oh, no, we're not going for 100 points. We're just going for however many points you collect. And this objective is worth 3 and that one's worth 1. And Slay the Warlord is a thing. But some of the, like there's an entire matrix, kind of like in Pariah Nexus, there was like the what's your stance going into a mission. This does the same thing, but the two player stances determines which mission you play rather than who gets a benefit. But then on top of that, there are special locations on the city board, because there are certain locations that have a special icon on them. You can only go after those locations, those strategic locations, if you have selected that stratagem from the previous round to assault one, and then you play a special mission which has like a particular terrain setup and special win and loss conditions. It encourages you to like kind of play either play kind of cagey, and like there's a whole thing of like at the end of each set of battles, you can take over terrain in the city, but you can only take either unclaimed stuff or stuff that belongs to a faction who your team beat. So like if you, like right now I'm in the Chaos faction playing my Emperor's Children alongside a Chaos Knights player. And if either of us beats the other factions, are there's an Imperium faction that's just all Imperium players. There's a Xenos faction, which is Eldari and Votan. So Dennis, it's like you, but two people. And then there's the Beep Boop Robots faction, which is mostly Tau, but that's also where the Necron player ended up. And so the idea is the Necron player is using the two Tau players to help him take control of the city. And it's already been determined that if the Tau faction wins, there will be one more set of games with Tau versus Necron to determine who actually wins. It's been interesting how we've been playing, because like as the Chaos player going after the Imperium, with the Imperium, like everybody started off in a corner. The Imperium had more territory, and they have the special location down in the corner that everyone is trying to go for. Like if you can take the control of that, that's worth a ton of points. Everyone's been gunning for the Imperium, which is why they started off with more territory. The map is a 5x5 grid. They're down to 2. They're down to two. They are both special locations, so you can't take those unless you have the special stratagems. There's two of them in the stratagem deck, and that deck gets passed around in order of who did the best in their games. And once a card is taken out of it, it's gone for that week. So only two people can go after those special locations in a given week. So that, like, as the Chaos player, we've just been taking stuff in a, we were like catty corner, like diagonally across from the Imperium player. So we just cut a heart straight through the middle of the city going for the Imperium lines. We don't really care about anybody else's territory. To prevent other people from going after them, one of the stratagems you can use is to raise a piece of territory, which means no one can take it. And if no one can take it, you can only take territory that's adjacent. So they cut off one of the avenues into their territory. They blew up one of their own territories that was actually worth points to not let other people in, which is such an Imperium thing to do. It's great.
I was about to say that exact same phrase.
So it's like it's been encouraging people to play the like, and then they there's a they've got like they've got the Saints Basilicanum, which is where this special relic is. That's the area down the corner. They also took the fortified palace that ended up on the map. And then they spent stratagem points to further fortify it, which means if even if you beat them, if you want to take that over, you have to roll a D6 on a 4+. You don't take it. They defend. They hold on to it further. So they have basically they're down to two, but they're so hard to take because they've fortified. They've shut down the paths into the city. Meanwhile, we earned enough stratagem points that we took both of the cards to be able to go after those, but we didn't beat the Imperium last week, so we couldn't go after them directly. So instead, we are going to be taking the two other special areas. There's the shuttleport and the void shield generator. The shield port is controlled by the Eldari Votan faction. The void generator is controlled by the Tau faction. So I'm actually paired against the Tau player, and the knights are paired against, I think, the Votan player. So we're going to be going after those two special locations, which also means nobody else can, because we took both those stratagems to use so that nobody else could take the Imperium stuff before we do. So it's like the nature of the board and how we're doing everything is actually, even though in the individual games we're playing normal games, but it's encouraging us to act in a way that affects everyone in the campaign, which I like better than the mini game portion of Crusade, because now it is impacting everybody's storyline. Also, Dennis, you would have. So this is not the first time we've gone after the shuttle port. Not this week that we just did, but week two, the knight player was paired with the Eldari player. And I'm like, yeah, go get him for Slaanesh, because he's also doing Slaanesh knights. You would be proud of the Eldari player, because in the end, a single Farseer held the landing pad, survived gunfire from two brigands, and survived melee with a single like rampager to hold the fort. That one Farseer held the entire shuttle port
that
for the Eldari.
That is impressive. He needs to get marked for greatness.
And so like so while we do not have like a level up system, the story, like, it's, I feel like as an overall narrative, it's making for a more interesting narrative, because it is telling stories. Like, we're all going to remember the story of that Farseer who held off against an entire squad, you know, like army of knights to make sure that the Eldari held that shuttle port. And this system, like, you could layer Crusade on top of this. So I'm not saying like this is exclusive to Crusade, but I am sad that they have. Like, they did Urban Conquest, and then they just abandoned it immediately. And it's a shame, because not that you necessarily need to do more with it, but it's like, man, it would be nice to see an updated version of this. So I went through all the stratagems, took out the ones that were tied to particular terrain pieces, and reworked them for 10th edition. So just so we could have them available, because there's like, This was back in the day of all the stratagems. Everyone has all the stratagems. So I cut it down to 10. There are 10 Cities of Death specific stratagems now.
Is that something that would be worthwhile to like put on the website as like a free download for other people?
I absolutely can. I have it in both HTML and PDF formats.
Yeah, I just think like as we come up with stuff like that and convert some of these things, like I would love for that stuff to just be out there for people.
Yeah, I would like my overall goal, I would love to fully convert the Urban Conquest system. Like the campaign system, I don't think needs really any changes. It's you know, again, you're earning campaign points and strategic points, you're spending strategic points. That's system independent. Like that doesn't care what edition you're in. But the missions and the stratagems, I think, do need to be updated because obviously there's a lot of rules changes, like even the way cover works, buildings work, like that, like the way we do scoring, that's all changed. So updating those missions and stratagems for a newer system, I think, has value. So yeah, I can absolutely, I will put the PDF up and I will link it in the show notes so that if anyone is interested in using an updated version of the Urban Conquest stratagems for doing a 10th edition City Fight game, which is City Fight is one of those things that they keep bringing back because there's like the original 3rd edition City Fight, which I have and which Snipe and Wib have done a very good video covering, like digging into that old book. I will link that in there as well because that's just a neat thing. Eventually, Urban Conquest will be old enough for them to cover that. I'm looking forward to whenever they do that video. But like there was the like Battle Zone City Fight. There was the Cities of Death book in fourth and fifth edition, and then eighth edition had Urban Conquest, which was effectively the new Cities of Death with the whole campaign system. And we haven't seen anything since. And hopefully they do bring that back. Because urban battles are fun to play, and so it would be nice to see that back. But yeah, I will absolutely put up any conversions I've done for people to look at and use.
Well, because even if it's one of those things where people aren't necessarily wanting to play like Urban Conquest, I think just seeing what other people put together for narrative stuff is helpful because they can look at it and be like, okay, here's a jumping off point to convert my own things, or you know, I can take this idea and I can build on it, I can remix it, I can come up with something that works for our specific armies and playgroup.
Mm-hmm. And then beyond like these systems, there's also some very basic things that GW has covered in past books. I don't know if they've really covered them much in 10th edition, but there's like the entire idea of tree campaigns where you have a bunch of missions set up. Those tend to work better with two players where it's like, okay, so we're going to play a game. Depending on who wins, we're going to go to this mission or that mission. Depending on who wins that one, we'll go to this mission or that mission. They don't necessarily scale well to more groups than that. And for narrative, like, you do want something that scales. Cities of, like, the Urban Conquest thing scales up to 4 players, but we've split it into, like, 4 teams, so it would still scale well, and it talks about how to do 2 or 3 just fine. But sometimes if you just you and a bud and you want to do a campaign, a tree campaign is totally fine. Or you can do just, we're going to do a series of missions, and then whoever wins gets, like, some bonus in the next mission. And especially with, like I said, there's the bunker missions. Like, GW's done a lot of, like, in 9th edition, they had a Flashpoint series they were doing in White Dwarf that had, like, special missions and things and kind of leaned into the 9th edition version of Crusade. The bunker battles don't lean into that. They, like, the bunker missions they've been doing in for 10th edition have not been leaning into Crusade, but they are more narrative missions. They're, like, more variety than what you would see just out of, like, the Leviathan deck. So there's a lot of materials to borrow from for doing a narrative system. And I think that's the thing, like, I want people to realize is Crusade is a cool narrative army management system, but it is in itself not a narrative crusade or narrative campaign system. It is something you can layer on top of anything. And otherwise, like, you can layer an Escalation League or Kill Team League on top of a campaign system, or do regular games on top of a campaign system. In fact, as far as Kill Team, we've already had some chatter for the league saying, hey, for the next campaign we do, would anyone be interested in doing Kill Team? And because Urban Conquest came out in 8th edition when that first iteration of Kill Team came out with like the orange branding and everything, there it does specifically mention Kill Team battles can also be played as part of the campaign. So we may start working Kill Team games in between our 40K games. So, and just like you guys are talking about doing like boarding actions as like, hey, do you want to do boarding actions as a side activity to part of the narrative? Or, I want to say the US Open or was it the US Open that offered Kill Teams as special events?
Like, yes.
After hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it so did like have the grand an impact over the overall.
Yeah. And the grand narrative this year, they're doing a specific track for just Kill Team that's going to be part of the grand narrative. So oh, you've got cool. the 40K games are going on there, but people who want to just play Kill Team can be playing Kill Team games that also factor into the overall narrative.
Yeah, so for all the aspects of 40K, and of course, like I know Horus Heresy players, they've been doing their own campaign stuff for years before even the newest edition of Horus Heresy. I remember at Renegade Open, they were combining games of Titanicus and Horus Heresy, where it's like, we're going to have a game of Titanicus going on, and that will affect like the next the battles going on in at the 32 millimeter scale. And I imagine now that we've got that replaced with Legions Imperialis, I could absolutely see them doing like, okay, so we're going to do a Legions Imperialis battle, and then that will determine the missions that we play for like the next part of the campaign. So like there's entire ways you can work all these various systems together. But I do want to iterate, narrative is a lot of fun to play, whether it's Crusade or otherwise. I may have some issues with Crusade, but I still think it's a fun system. And I have issues with 10th edition. I still think it's a fun system. But if you are feeling burned out on competitive play, or if it just doesn't scratch the itch, I know a lot of people in the league that I'm playing in now, a good number of them started playing at other stores in the area that were mostly focused on competitive play and discovered it's like, this is not the feel I'm going for. In fact, I was talking with the guy who's running the league, Derek, and he was like, yeah, I was playing at this other store and they were completely focused on match play and competitive play. And I was playing an opponent where he was like, basically pushing rules as written as far as he could. And Derek says like, man, are you just like trying to like manipulate the rules? And he's like, well, yeah, I'm trying to win. So I'm going to do whatever I can. And it's what I'm doing is legal. I'm just going to go out of my way to try to win the game. And Derek's like, afterwards, he's like, that is not what he wanted from the game. He came to this by way of like D&D. And so he's like, I'm a storyteller at heart. I love this game. I like playing this game, but I want to tell stories. I don't want to just bash figures together until somebody wins. So that's what spurred him. Like he tracked down a copy of Urban Conquest, which I think was already out of print before he got into playing, but he tracked a copy down because he like did some checking on narrative campaigns. Like that's what he wanted to do. And found a like-minded group of people who were also kind of like not really feeling the competitive thing, but wanted to play. And he's created this group. And like I said, they're in their second campaign. It's going really well. People are already talking about what they want to do for the next one. So it's good to see narrative groups, because I know in the past, like it's all been tournaments. And I think part of that is because while GW released narrative products, they never really supported them. And so I think the fact that Crusade is actively supported, even if you don't use it, kind of opens the door for people to realize, oh, I don't have to play tournament play. Even though you never had to, but making it visible as an option can really change up how people approach things.
Right, and I think that's the key of it, what you said there, because I think at the US Opens, they put that emphasis on having that as an equal event. it's brought it to the forefront where people say, oh, well, this is a thing. GW's supporting it. And because GW's supporting it, it's easier to find those people. And I think a few years ago, prior to GW doing this, if you looked online or anything, the only things you saw for 40K was really the tournaments. And the tournaments was attracting the competitive players. And that's why that was the mindset that everyone had. Well, this is how you play.
And I understand why, too, because like if you're at a game store or if you're looking move to a new area and you're looking for new players, competitive and like match play is a definitive set of rules. I know that, you know, I'm going to show up at the store at 3 p.m. with 2000 points playing this army, this edition, boom, and it's fit. When you do narrative and you do campaigns, it's more involved. There's more customization, there's more tweaking, there's more things. So it's, yeah, I get why the default for a lot of times is we're just going to play the game and we're going to play, you know, match play and the rules and we're going to make sure everything's balanced. But yeah, it's not the only way to play. And, you know, you, the thing you mentioned with coming from a D&D background really hits home with me because, you know, in D&D, it's all about homebrew and tweaking and making your own things and kind of putting your own twist on it. And that's why I like narrative play in 40K, because you get to do that same type of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do like that. And I like that people are embracing that. And this is not saying, you know, I'm not saying narrative play is better than tournament play. I think narrative play is better for some people than tournament play is, and vice versa. I think if a tournament player came into our narrative league, they probably wouldn't want to play 1,000-point games, and they'd want to play a bigger game because that's what they're used to, and they would not, in, you know, the vibe would be very different than perhaps they're wanting. So it's, you know, there's room in this hobby for both types is basically
absolutely,
you know, the point I want to drive home. And I think, again, because GW has been actively supporting that and making that very clear and visible rather than just kind of paying lip service to it. And obviously they're getting a lot of active support to tournament play right now, and that is good. But I'm also glad they're giving a lot of active support to narrative play. So what I would say is if tournament play is not hitting it for you, if you do not have fun playing competitively, or if it's just, or maybe you're just a little burnt out, you want to try something new, I would encourage you to see if there are narrative groups in your area. A lot of our players, you know, I think the other thing is narrative is generally portrayed, is often been portrayed in the past as, well, that's what something the players who are really deeply established do. Like, you've got these huge collections, it's time to play a narrative campaign. And I would say that that's no longer the case because, like, Dennis, I know a lot of your players in Crusade, these are players from the last year. Like, these are new players, effectively. Yeah.
And I think what you'd said there is none of them really have interest in the tournament scene. They just want to play their models.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I didn't ask if they, from a D&D background or something, I think they more just have these models. And they're all, their mindset is more also more of, I want to just have fun and tell a story rather than, I need to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think with our group, a lot of our players are newer players. Not all of them, but a lot of them are newer players. This is like their first army, or, you know, maybe this is their chance to, like, I'm starting a new army and I want to do something very different, and this is a neat way to get into it. So, yeah, I think this is not something that I feel that new players should be scared off by. And I do think that in the case of our league, maybe not using the Crusade rules has, and having a game master kind of managing the, you know, the overall campaign has been good for us as a group, especially for the newer players, because they can focus on learning their army without having to learn the Crusade rules at the same time. Cause it is a lot to try to take on all at once. And I know you, Dennis, like, you guys started off playing like Combat Patrol and smaller games before you jumped into Crusade.
Oh yeah, we've been playing for a few months before, and the only reason we decided to try into this is they were comfortable with their armies. They said, hey, I've played this enough, let's try something different. Hey, this sounds different and interesting, let's go with it. So that's kind of the route we took.
Mm-hmm. I think Crusade is a lot to tackle if you're doing it right from your first experience. It's not necessarily where I would go if you're just starting up. that's where like an escalation league would be actually a really good choice, or a combat patrol league, something like that. But yeah, if you are interested in playing 40K and doing telling neat stories with your miniatures and having fun battles, if that is what sounds like fun to you, I would highly recommend checking out narrative play, whether it is Crusade or otherwise. There's lots of fun systems that people can use to tell stories. And also it lets you, like, you can dig into past, like, previous edition supplements and find stuff that is, you know, can be converted or is still relatively applicable for doing, you know, doing narrative campaigns. Like, even like the old Imperial Armor books, if you track one of those down, like at Half Price Books, a lot of them have a campaign system built into those that you could just layer 10th edition on top of. You wouldn't be able to use any like the data sheets from them, but the missions could be reworked relatively easily, I think.
Okay, I'm going to say my sad thing here. I kind of miss the Imperial Armor books. I only ever bought like the ones that had Eldar in them, but they were good books that had a lot of fluff. They had some stuff to play. They had new data sheets and characters that it was just, I liked them.
They were always really, really well produced, like actual, like just nice books.
Yeah, they were all really good. And unfortunately, it's just, you know, they haven't produced anything like that. They switched over to doing like almost exclusively Horus Heresy for a long time. And now Horus Heresy has been rolled into like the main, you know, Warhammer brand. You know, so yeah, I miss the Imperial Armor stuff. But if you can track those down, though, they're still, I think good they're reads. They're good reads. And check out Arbiter Ian has a couple of really good recaps of some of the campaigns, because I know he's done like Siege of Rax, and I want to say Taros he's campaign. Done. Yeah. I did the Taros campaign, Siege of Rax, and I want to say he's done the Badab War as well, which was like a 2-book series as well. So yeah, those, they're all really good reads. Check them out. You know, see what it inspires for you. Check out the Crusade books. Like, and you know, fortunately the core book has like the Tyrannic War rules in it, if you can get that, if you're just used to using the free rules. I know they did a Tyrannic War book. Let me see if it is still available. It probably isn't, but you never know.
And it could always be available at Half Price Books too.
Oh yeah. No, they do. I searched for Tyrannic War and all I got was Tyranid Warriors. So not
well,
so
they're
much.
Part of it, right?
Pariah Nexus is available. Arcs of Omen Abaddon is available, but that is for playing boarding actions. That's not really going to help you for general 40K. And boarding actions is its own thing. We've talked about that on past episodes. Interesting. The Leviathan mission deck is now marked as sold out online. They are not selling any more of them.
Good.
But yeah, Tyrannic War is gone. So Pariah Nexus is the only Crusade book outside of what's in the core book,
which in a way makes sense, because I think they're trying to have this be yearly books.
Also, the core book, it looks like the core book may not include the Tyrannic War now. It was only the Leviathan core book that had the... So interesting. So basically, Tyrannic War has been retired and is now Pariah Nexus. So you get one... That's a bit of a bummer. That's what I get for having my special privileged Leviathan copy. So probably, you know, near the end of the year, beginning of the next year is when we'll see the next Crusade book come out. But I would definitely recommend, I do think of the two, the Pariah Nexus is the better campaign. So if you're interested in Crusade, pick up the Pariah Nexus book. It's $60, so it's the price of a codex, but I think the narrative in there is interesting, and I think you'll get a lot of use out of the missions and the campaign system. It's something that can just be used regardless of faction. And also a book that if you are playing if you have a group that's wanting to play, really only one person needs to have a copy, so it's something you can kind of like pool money on and get if the idea of a $60 campaign book is a bit much for you.
I mean, that is what our group has done, is I'm the only one with the Pariah Nexus book, but we're all using it.
Yeah. So, again, kind of having a game master or a group leader for a narrative campaign, it does cut down on how many people need to buy the stuff for it. And I think that pretty much covers everything we wanted to talk about with narrative and campaign play, other than the fact that we have a narrative event coming up at Midwest Conquest.
Yeah, so we just hit fourth player signed up today, so we actually have, like, I think enough to run an event. But yeah, Dennis and I have got some good ideas cooked up for this, and once the event happens, I think we'll probably talk a little bit more about some of the planning that went into it and how we structured it and stuff, but yeah, excited for it, MidwestConquest.com. If you're interested, there's other events. There's the GT. There's an Age of Sigmar event, Marvel Crisis Protocol, Bolt Action, Beer Hammer, Night Joust. A lot of fun events. So if you can make it, yeah, go to MidwestConquest.com and, yeah, grab tickets.
Yeah, and that's going to be Mother's Day weekend, May 11th and 12th. So sign up for that. You've got about a month and a half before that event. So if you are interested in joining us for some narrative play, or just hanging out and playing playing at the GT or any of the other events, or just, you know, wanting to check out a like, maybe it's your first big Warhammer event and wanting to check it out, we'd love to see you there. All right, I think that's going to wrap it up for episode 297 200 or episode 300 creeps ever closer. Theoretically, we might actually be able to do it at Midwest Conquest, which would be really cool. So yeah, we'll be hitting a huge milestone in just a couple of months. But until then, from all of us here at Preferred Enemies, I'm your host, Rob.
Kevin.
Dennis.
And Richard.
Good night, good gaming, and remember, telling a story is a great way to play.
Preferred Enemies is an Undergopher Radio production and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 Unported License. Our theme music is Metal Slug 2 Super Vehicle 001/2 No Need to Reload, originally by Takushi Hayamuda and remixed by Roataka, courtesy of OC Remix. It can be found at ocremix.com.